WABC New York and 107.1 WLIR Hampton Bays.
It's the 77 WABC News Hour.
Talking the news with Noah Layden.
All the news you need to know with Joe Nolan, traffic, Justin Ellick, sports, and now
talking the news with Noah
on 77 WABC.
Yep, that's me. Good morning. It is Monday, April 22nd. Your forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. Sunshine today, high 62. Tonight and overnight, clear, low 44, and then Tuesday, sun and clouds, high 61. If you are walking out the door with us right now, it's 42 and clear in New Rochelle up in Westchester County, 37 and clear in South Brunswick over in New Jersey, and it is 41 and clear outside our Midtown studios. A whole lot to get to as we work our way up to the 6 o'clock hour. Sid and friends in the morning all weekend long watching these protests on the campus of Columbia University in Upper Manhattan. It has been pretty intense. Pro-Palestinian protesters taking over the green at Columbia University. When we were last met on Friday, they had arrested more than 100 of them. Those protesters were back all weekend. Things feeling unsafe for Jewish students on campus. In fact, so much so that a prominent rabbi for Columbia University is warning Jewish students to go home and not to return to campus because of extreme anti-Semitism at the Ivy League University. The warning follows yet another night of anti-Israel protests on campus. And students who are identifiably Jewish, the ones who are wearing a kippah, a yarmulke, those are the ones who say they're being harassed. Other students say they just feel unsafe. And it's these protesters, they say, that are making them feel that way.
The students at Columbia took a very brave step and said enough is enough.
The mass arrests and the suppression of students, I would say that's galvanized us.
Yeah, these protesters are not going to go away. Rabbi Ellie Buchler cautioning students yesterday. He sent this WhatsApp message to Jewish students on campus telling them to return home as soon as possible, remain home until the reality in and around the campus has dramatically improved. Buchler telling students it's become clear that Columbia cannot guarantee Jewish students safety in the face of what he calls extreme anti-Semitism and anarchy. And the campus, the school, pushing back and saying that they're doing everything they can to protect the students. But this is as the protests continue today.
The level of pain, anger, and deep love for our people is what drives me. It's what brings me. Palestinians in Gaza, Palestinians in the West Bank, Palestinians all across Palestine are being subjected to, but especially the genocide in Gaza.
And it wasn't just Columbia that was having this stuff going on. A Jewish Yale University student reporting on the anti-Israel protests, she's head of the school newspaper, was stabbed in the eye with a Palestinian flag. Her assailant apparently got away, has gone unpunished. More protests there at Yale as well.
The whole thing breaks my heart. And
So here was a Jewish professor who's on the campus of Columbia University.
The whole thing breaks my heart. And especially, I think the worst, horrible, most horrible thing is what's going on with these hostages, that it's 198 days today.
She's talking about, of course, the hostages that are being held by Hamas in Gaza since the October 7th attacks. The Chabad, which is a Jewish organization on the Columbia University campus, says they've actually hired security guards that will take students from the campus dorms to Passover Seders. Passover begins at sundown tonight, and of course the traditional meal is a Seder, and Chabad offers Seders for students who don't go home, and so they'll have security for students who feel uneasy about going back and forth between the dorms and where they hold these meals to take them there.
Sometimes it takes, at moments, just the individual walking with faith and confidence through whatever is in their way, in their face. Eventually it splits open and we make it through.
Yeah, these students, though, saying they felt intimidated. They feel like it's dangerous. Awful things have been yelled at them as they go back and forth to campus.
In no reality is it okay that a Jewish kid shouldn't be okay to walk out of their dorm room to the Chabad house.
And that's going on. There's three more people under arrest in these demonstrations that have been taking place on the Columbia campus.
The NYPD says protesters returned to the campus Saturday to support the students who continue to stay outside with their sleeping bags and books. Earlier earlier in the week, 113 people were taken into custody after clashing with police officers. Meantime, a Columbia University rabbi urges Jewish students to go home and not return to campus after the Passover holiday, as it's not safe for them. This after one protester held up a sign saying the Israeli students waving Israel's flag while peacefully protesting should be the next targets of Hamas. Lisa Salvati, NBC News Radio, New York.
The other big story of the day will be in Lower Manhattan. Former President Trump, his trial gets underway today in that hush money case. He continues to call the judge in the hush money trial a whack job.
What's happening here with the judicial system is an outrage, and all over the world they're watching it, and all over the world they're seeing it.
The former president went on to blast New York Attorney General Letitia James. Opening statements expected this morning. The former president accused of falsifying business records in order to cover up payments allegedly made to adult film star Stormy Daniels just prior to the 2016 election. Former president claims his trials are a coordinated witch hunt meant to help President Biden in the 2024 race for the White House.
Beating him by a lot. And this is the only way they think they can win, but it's not going to work. This is a giant witch hunt to try and hurt a campaign that's beating the worst president in history. Biden's the worst president in the history of our country.
National Enquirer magazine publisher David Pecker. He's set to be the first witness on the stand this morning.
According to the New York Times, Pecker is expected to testify about conversations with Trump about the hush money payments. Pecker, who was the publisher of the National Enquirer in 2016, admitted to running a catch-and-kill plan in order to help Trump in the election that year. Also expected on the stand to testify, former Trump personal attorney Michael Cohen, Stormy Daniels, and aide Hope Hicks. I'm Chris Garagio.
WABC News Time 508. Let's talk more about this hush money case that begins in Lower Manhattan today. South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem slamming the hush money case. She's one of many Republicans coming to Donald Trump's defense this morning.
To do it conveniently during a presidential election when he's campaigning to return to the White House, I think, proves that this is all politically motivated.
Kristi Noem apparently or maybe on the short list of VPs that Trump is considering in his 2024 run for the White House.
My hope is that the people and the jury will do what is right and hear the evidence and see clearly that this is an unprecedented trial, but it's unprecedented in how ridiculous it is.
Now, from what we hear from the court watchers, the people who've been in court every day, there are some members of this jury that seem to be clearly Trump supporters. Now, whether that'll help them or not, don't know.
Well, my hope is that all Americans can trust our judicial system, and that's really what this case will prove out. I think it's a little ridiculous that they've waited years to bring these types of charges against Donald Trump.
Yeah, so we'll watch it later today. This, as we've learned more about this Florida man who set himself on fire Friday outside the courthouse where Trump is on trial, apparently had a lot of issues.
Police say 37-year-old Max Azzarello poured some kind of an accelerant over his body and lit himself on fire in the designated protest area in front of the courthouse. Before setting himself on fire, he was seen throwing anti-government pamphlets into the air. Azzarello was rushed to a hospital burn unit where police say he later died of his injuries. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
WABC News Time 510. Let's go down to Washington, D.C. A $95 billion aid package for Ukraine, Israel, and the Indo-Pacific is expected to pass the Senate any day this week. Could be today or tomorrow. Connecticut Senator Richard Blumenthal telling Fox News yesterday the foreign aid sends a message to the world that America is back on the offense.
This measure, strongly bipartisan, I think, sends a message to the world. The foreign minister of Lithuania yesterday said, good to have you back, America.
The package includes about $61 billion for Ukraine, $26 billion for Israel, $8 billion for allies in the Indo-Pacific and other national security measures.
I think America is back on offense, and this sign that we can come together in a bipartisan way for our national security, send a message to Vladimir Putin, to Xi, to the dictators of the world, too soon to be popping your champagne corks. America is going to defend democracy. The defense Production Act, which we used in the Korean War, can convert civilian production capacity to produce the artillery, the vehicles.
South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham also praising the bill, stressing the need to back Ukraine in its war against Russia. Graham warned that Russian President Vladimir Putin will not stop if he's successful in the invasion of Ukraine.
Well, if you want American military members to stay out of the fight with Russia, help Ukraine. If they go into a NATO nation, Russia, we're in a fight. The Ukrainian military, with our help, has killed about 50% of the combat power of the Russians. This is the year of more. They're going to have more weapons, but we also want them to have new weapons.
Ukrainian President Zelensky thanking the U.S. after the House passed that bill over the weekend, providing that additional assistance.
First of all, I'd like to say thanks to the Congress for the bipartisan support. And I'd like to say thanks to Speaker Johnson and President Biden. Indeed, it is so important.
Speaking through an interpreter, as you could probably tell there, Zelensky says it's critical to get resources on the battlefield as soon as possible. The package, again, $61 billion for Ukraine.
I think this support will really strengthen the armed forces of Ukraine. And we will have a chance for victory. The United States will stay with Ukraine, will protect the Ukrainians, and they will protect, they'll protect democracy in the world. This is the show of leadership and strength of the United States.
So House Speaker, Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson got this bill through Congress against the threat that he might lose his speakership. You had Marjorie Taylor Greene, who was against this funding to Ukraine, said that she would vote to have the House Speaker vacated, pushed out of office. So will that happen now that this bill is going through? Texas Republican Tony Gonzalez doesn't believe Johnson will be removed as Speaker of the House. He says Johnson would survive threats of his removal.
I think Mike Johnson's going to avoid the cannibals in his own party here. He stood up to him this weekend, and the adults retook control of the U.S. Congress.
Gonzalez slamming conservatives backing the effort to oust Johnson with a motion to vacate.
I think people got sick and tired, he's one of them, of Marjorie Taylor Greene being in charge of their life, and they just finally said no. And so I think and I hope that the Democrats will continue to stand with Mike Johnson here.
Now the question is, will she pull the trigger and try to oust Johnson? We just don't know.
He will survive. Look, the House is a rough and rowdy place, but Mike Johnson is going to be just fine.
And so Democrats were speaking out over the weekend saying they don't want Speaker Johnson out. Florida Congressman Jared Moskowitz says removing Johnson would only embolden foreign adversaries, including China, Russia, and Iran.
We know Russia and China are trying to destabilize the country, trying to destabilize the world, and we have to make sure the United States stands for Western democracy. What Marjorie Taylor Greene and what Thomas Massie and what Paul Gosar are trying to accomplish by removing the Speaker of the House in this very moment after October 7th would only embolden China, it would only embolden Russia, it would only embolden Iran.
And he agrees with the Republicans who say Marjorie Taylor Greene's approach to foreign policy would only benefit America's enemies.
She would let the Ayatollah in Iran take Israel, and she would let Putin take Europe.
All right, 5:15. Let's head over to the 77 WABC Sports Desk. Happy Monday. Good morning, Justin Ellis.
Happy Monday. Good morning to you, Noam Layden. Start here on the ice at the Garden. Matt Rempe and Artemi Panarin scored 33 seconds apart in the second period yesterday. And the President's Trophy-winning Rangers beat the Capitals 4-1 in Game 1 of their first-round playoff series. Jimmy Vesey had a goal and an assist. Chris Kreider also scored. Barclay Goodrow had two assists for the Blue Shirts. Igor Shesterkin finished with 20 saves. The Rangers, seeking their first championship in 30 years, won their third straight and 11th in their last 14 games. They were able to bottle up Capital star Alex Ovechkin, who had no shots on goal. Ovechkin was held without a shot only 5 times in 79 games during the season. Looks like that's going to be their game plan here in this series. The Blue Shirts will pick up round one action with the Caps tomorrow night. Game 2 at the Garden. After dropping Game 1 of their first-round series against the Carolina Hurricanes by a score of 3-1, the Islanders will try and punch back tonight in Game 2. Puck drop there, scheduled for 7:30 p.m. in Carolina. On the NBA hardwood, following the next big 111-104 Game 1 win over the Philadelphia 76ers to open up Round 1 of the NBA playoffs, they'll see if they can jump out to a commanding 2-0 series lead tonight at the Garden. Tip-off for Game 2 set for 7:30 p.m. with the Knickerbockers heading in as 5.5-point favorites. In baseball,
Embiid, is he going to be okay?
He's still questionable, but he's been questionable since he came back. So that's been his status. Head coach Nick Nurse says he's probably going to play. His minutes might not be up to where they usually are, but they had a rebounding issue in Game 1, so they need him out there.
And didn't he end up having like 20? He was clearly gingerly running up and down the court after he hit the court in the second quarter.
Yeah.
Did he? But he still had like 29 points.
Yeah, I mean, listen, he's still a force to be reckoned with. Yeah. That's why you got to, you know, if he's good enough to go, I mean, it's the playoffs. It's, you know, healthy enough to play. It's a different standard. It's a different standard than the regular season, you know. If you, and especially if it's your best player, you need him out there. So he'll probably be out there, no. In baseball, Luis Hill struck out a career-high 9 over 5 2/3 innings for his first major league win in 3 years, and the Yankees took advantage of a sloppy Adam Savale in a 4-run fifth to beat his Tampa Bay Rays 5-4. Alex Verdugo had a big day at the dish, notching 3 hits as New York improved to 6-1 in series this season. Up next for the Yanks, they'll open a 4-game set against the Oakland Athletics this afternoon at the stadium. First pitch set for 1:05 p.m. and Carlos Rodon scheduled to get the start in L.A. After winning the first 2 legs of the weekend set, the Mets fell big in their finale against the Dodgers. Final score 10-0. After winning 12 of 15 since their 0-5 start to the season, the Mets were shut out for the second time this year. New York had won 8 of its previous 9. They'll stay out west for a few more days to meet the Giants in San Francisco for the 3-game set. First pitch for game one scheduled for tonight at 9:45 p.m. Eastern Time. Jose Quintana primed to take the hill there. That's your Sports Gnome. I'm Justin Ellick, 77 WABC.
WABC News Time 5:20. The Supreme Court going to hear arguments today over whether homeless people can be cited for camping on public property.
At the center of the case is the Oregon City of Grants Pass, which has been enforcing ordinances that ban camping in city parks and on public property. A lower court ruled that if there are more homeless people than available shelter beds, the city can't fine people for camping outside. Opponents of the city's rules argue they violate the Eighth Amendment's protections against excessive fines and cruel and unusual punishment. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
5:20, let's go down to Texas. Russian hackers forced their way into computers that control the water system in a tiny Texas town, causing a holding tank to overflow. Cybersecurity experts say this was bound to happen eventually.
Water systems in the U.S. don't have the money or the personnel to protect those systems, and so they make pretty easy targets.
Yeah, these small towns worried. Max Kilger there from the University of Texas at San Antonio says more hacks like this going to happen now that the bad guys know what to look for. The attack happened in the town of Muleshoe, which is in the Texas panhandle. A group called Sandworm was taken responsibility. They're tied to Russian intelligence.
They signed a system that has vulnerabilities in it, in their hardware and software, and they take advantage of that.
Yeah, so now they're going to go after all kinds of critical infrastructure now that they've seen they've been successful down in Texas.
And this strategy is often used by terrorism groups to effectively sort of instill fear and anxiety in the target group in general.
And that taking place is President Biden set to reauthorize the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act for another 2 years.
Biden signed the bill extending the warrantless surveillance program on Saturday after it passed the Senate on a 60-34 vote. The FISA program lets the government spy on the communications of foreigners living outside the U.S., but it also allows it to surveil their correspondence with Americans. The bill includes reforms that roll back some surveillance powers to address criticisms from privacy advocates. The White House applauded Congress for passing the measure, calling it a vital intelligence collection tool. I'm Mark Mayfield.
Unless one crew member confirmed dead while several others missing after 2 Japanese Navy helicopters appear to have crashed.
Japanese Defense Minister Minoru Kihara says it's likely the two choppers collided into each other during anti-submarine training exercises Saturday night. Both crashed into the sea off the southern coast of Japan. A search and rescue effort is underway for the missing sailors, and the U.S. has offered its assistance. The flight recorders from both helicopters have been recovered. Japanese officials say they don't believe any other country was involved in the collision. I'm Scott Carr in Washington.
Tesla's been having a tough time of it. They've dropped 10% of their crew of employees, laying them off. Now they're dropping prices.
The electric vehicle manufacturer has faced declining sales recently. So now it's reduced prices of the Model X, Model Y, and Model S by $2,000. The company also announced layoffs last week, firing roughly 14,000 employees. The company's stock price has dropped about 40% so far this year amid falling sales and increased competition. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
WABC News Time 5:23. Out to the campaign for the White House. President Biden rallying union workers to get behind his reelection campaign, delivering more remarks at the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Conference in Washington, D.C.
Middle class built America, and unions built the middle class. That's not when you built the middle class. There would be no middle class without you.
Biden laying out his bipartisan infrastructure law. He's trying to help create new union jobs, he says, and he referred to himself as the most pro-union president in American history.
Through power grids, new offshore wind turbines put up by the IBEW workers. A national network of 500,000 electric vehicle stations are going to be built by IBEW workers.
In IBU, the union has endorsed Biden in his re-election bid against Donald Trump. Meanwhile, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker says it would be illogical for Democrats to vote for someone other than President Biden in the presidential election. Of course, there's lots of third-party candidates this time around. Pritzker arguing Democrats must vote for Biden if they want to make sure Trump doesn't make it back to the White House.
It's throwing away your vote if you're a Democrat and you vote for someone else on the ballot other than Joe Biden.
Yeah, so RFK Jr. has made it onto the ballot in Illinois, and we're seeing all kinds of poll numbers about who he'll take votes away from.
And I believe that people will see that contrast of values that I'm talking about and understand that they've got to vote for Joe Biden. When people go to the ballot box in November, they're going to see that there are really only two choices.
Yeah, so here's what we don't know. There's so many polls showing so many different scenarios. Independent presidential hopeful Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s third-party bid could take more of a bite out of former President Trump's numbers than Joe Biden. That's according to a new poll. Now, we've seen polls that show the other way. Trump, 77, ekes out a win against Biden, one-on-one, 46-44% in this poll. But when Kennedy is added to the mix, Biden tops Trump, 39-37%, followed by Kennedy at 13%, Jill Stein at 3%, and Cornel West at 2%. This is a new NBC News poll. That finding goes against some other polling results and comes against the backdrop of tightening polls between the two presidents. Trump's edge over Biden nationally slipped to 0.4 percentage points in the latest Real Clear Politics aggregate of polls. However, when Kennedy, Stein, and West are added to that mix, Trump leads, goes to 1.3% nationally per the most recent data. So you can see it's all very confusing and all across the board. It's hard to know what Kennedy's campaign is going to do to what campaign. 526, the winter blues, or seasonal affective disorder, or SAD as it's sometimes called, may be in the rearview mirror, but for some people they actually experience reverse SAD. Spring depression is a form of seasonal affective disorder. Most people, of course, get this when it's dark in the wintertime, but some people get this in the spring. In fact, suicides rise in the spring during the late spring and the early summer months.
A lot of people are depressed in the winter, but they kind of hide in their house. And then all of a sudden it's spring and you're almost forced to go out. These people are already depressed. It can trigger something terrible.
Never heard of that before. Dr. Don Buckland, a preventative medicine doctor, says even people who aren't suffering from depression may find themselves a little down as we move through spring. Usually you think the opposite's true.
The same drugs that work in winter are extremely effective in spring, too. And it takes a couple weeks for those medications to work, but they work wonderfully in most people.
The opening bell, it rings this morning as Wall Street ushers in a new trading week. Stocks closed out mixed on Friday to wrap up what was a pretty tough week. The NASDAQ and S&P 500 fell for the sixth straight session, marking their longest losing record since 2022. A rally in American Express shares helped boost the Dow as inflation worries and the Middle East conflict weighed on overall market sentiment. At the closing on Friday, the Dow gained 211 points. S&P 500 lost 43. The NASDAQ fell 319 points.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. It's the 77 WABC News Hour.
Talking the news with Noam Layden.
All the news you need to know with Joe Nolan, Traffic, Justin Ellick, Sports, and now
Talking the News with Noam
on 77 WABC.
Yes, that's me. Good morning. It is Monday, April 22nd. Your forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. Sunshine, a beautiful day on the way. High 62 tonight and overnight, low 44, and then Tuesday, much of the same. Sun, clouds, high 61. If you are walking out the door with us right now, so happy you are. 42 and clear in New Rochelle up in Westchester County. 37 and clear in South Brunswick over in New Jersey. And it is 40 and clear outside our Midtown studios. We'll start this half hour right here in the city. How slow can you drive? I found out that it's very difficult to drive really slow, as there's this one road that I have to go down from Jersey City into Hoboken that takes me into the Lincoln Tunnel every day as I drive into the city. And I can't tell you how many times I've been snagged on that road for going over the speed limit. Some of it is the cops are hanging out in the middle of the night waiting to grab people. And I've been pulled over, a few times already. Thankfully, a few times they've just said, keep on driving. One time they did give me a ticket. So I wonder, now they're going to lower the speed limit, or at least have the opportunity to lower to 20 miles an hour, which is the same speed limit. I have to go down this one certain road that connects me to Hoboken, and I find it very difficult to go 20 miles an hour. I know I'm not alone. And I know I should be able to do it, but it's difficult. Just the car, even if you don't push the pedal, I feel like it goes almost 20 miles an hour. This is all part of the state budget up in Albany. Governor Hochul announced that Sammy's Law is part of the state budget. Sammy was this kid who was killed in 2013 by a driver going at a high speed when he went into the street to grab a soccer ball. Sammy was 12 years old at the time. I mean, just a god-awful story. And so it's his mother who's been pushing to lower the speed limit across the city, suggesting that it would be safer if, God forbid, you do get hit, but just safer to be driving slower because your response time when you're going 20 miles an hour is much better than when it's going 40 miles an hour.
And he was killed in front of our apartment building. We have a crisis on our roads. Nearly every single day in New York City, someone like my son is killed. Every mile per hour, someone is driving more slowly. The driver has that much more time to stop before they hit somebody. And if they do hit somebody, they have a 17% increase in the likelihood that someone will survive.
So, of course, I obviously feel for Amy Cohen. Oh, it's just an awful story. Nobody should have that happen to him. So the law would not apply to streets with three or more lanes in one direction, essentially like a highway. But it would for all these side streets and going down, you know, 9th Avenue in Manhattan. Some drivers, or any avenue for that matter, some drivers say they're in favor of the law.
Yes, because I have a young child, and I don't want him getting hit when I push him across the street in a stroller.
I totally get that. Here's a pedestrian who lives in Brooklyn who says slowing down's a good thing.
I think it's a good idea to try to keep pedestrians safe. I think especially on Atlantic Avenue, there's been some issues in the last, 6 months especially. I think someone was hit last year.
Based on a study by Families for Safe Streets, an estimated 30% of pedestrians struck by vehicles at 25 miles per hour would suffer injuries, and 12% of them could be killed. If this law goes into effect, and New York City will have the option whether to do it, the suggestion is that more lives would be saved.
These speed limits were stated originally years and decades ago when cars were less safe, less efficient, and less stopping power. Now with more modern cars, honestly, I think it should be the opposite. I think it should be 5 more, bring it up to 30.
Well, he does have a point. My car does that thing where if something gets in the way, it automatically applies the brakes. But, of course, not everybody has that. So if New York City goes this way, now they have the option whether to make this law in New York City, which it seems like they will. The speed limit would be 20 miles per hour. They did this in Washington, D.C. and Seattle, and they say it's been effective there. WABC News Time 539. Local governments in New York now have the power in shutting down illegal pot shops. That's also part of this state budget that was green-lighted over the weekend here in New York.
Governor Hochul introduced a plan, part of the new $237 billion state budget, to protect the Empire State's licensed marijuana dispensaries. She outlined a 5-point plan, including padlocking illegal storefronts, harsher penalties for landlords that know about the shops. It also gives local governments the power to shut down unlawful shops without any red tape from the state. The new budget has a spending plan that is the largest in New York's history. I'm Liz Redabali for WABC News.
Yeah, good luck going after those illegal pot shops. There's like 10 times as many of them as there are legal dispensaries across New York. Two men stabbed, another hit in the head with a bottle after an incident aboard one of these party boats. It was a day cruise out of Brooklyn. It happened on the Cornucopia Majesty. It was on an excursion. This 32-year-old man was stabbed in the torso. A 42-year-old man stabbed multiple times in the chest and abdomen. A 28-year-old also hit in the head with a bottle. Now, people on this day cruise said they weren't expecting anything like this.
It's really horrible. We came out here to have a great event, and it's very unfortunate. You know, there's a lot of money lost this evening. This is really bad. I had a really bad experience.
All victims were conscious, alert when they were taken to NYU Langone, Brooklyn, in stable condition. The trip ended when the boat returned early, as you might guess, to Pier 4 in Sunset Park. The NYPD outlining plans to protect the Jewish community for the Passover holiday that begins tonight at sunset. NYPD Police Commissioner Eddie Caban says the world has changed over the last year with growing violence in the Middle East and the recent spike in anti-Semitism here in the city.
What will never change is the NYPD's unwavering commitment to keeping our city and everyone in it safe.
Caban promising extra patrols to synagogues and other sensitive areas for the Passover holidays. That is, anti-Semitic incidents in New York State soared to their highest levels on record last year. Anti-Defamation League says there were more than 1,200 reports of assault, harassment, and vandalism targeting Jewish New Yorkers, a surge of 110%.
Jewish people are being targeted for who they are at school, at work, in Jewish institutions, in public spaces, in their communities, in their homes, again, on an average of once an hour.
That's the ADL CEO Jonathan Greenblatt says last year's numbers are more than double the previous record that was reached in 2022.
If your idea of protesting Israeli government policies is to assault or harass or scream at Jewish people, you're not an advocate, you're a bigot. The sum total more than doubled over 2022. Simply put, anti-Semitism in America is a national emergency.
WABC News Time 543. A New Jersey middle school teacher facing charges after she was accused of inappropriately touching a female student.
38-year-old Jenna Shabika, a teacher at Marlboro Memorial Middle School, has been suspended and is charged with harassment. The New York Post reports the alleged victim's mother claimed at a recent Board of Education meeting that Shabika sexually abused her daughter inside the school on March 13th. She also claims the abuse was witnessed by another staffer and caught on security cameras. Days after the meeting, bomb threats were called into the school, but nothing was found. In a statement, Shabika's attorney says Shabika has known the girl for 3 years, is close with the girl's family, and has done nothing wrong. Lisa Salvati, NBC News Radio, New Jersey.
WABC News Time 543. Let's head up to Westchester, where they're proposing new legislation to make it easier for domestic violence survivors to stay in their home, similar to a program they have here in the city. Westchester County lawmaker David Imamura is the sponsor of a bill that follows in the footsteps of a bill that was just passed here in the city.
And to ensure that victims of domestic violence are protected, we are proposing that the County of Westchester will pay for lock changes for those victims and pay for their shelter while the locks are being changed.
Yes, so this is always, of course, the problem is these survivors who are being beaten or harassed in their homes feel forced to leave their homes, end up in a shelter while their abusers stay in the home. So now the thought is change those locks. He says the number of homelessness in New York City, domestic violence, quite high, and that's happening in Westchester as well, as these people move into homeless shelters. When they have a home, they could potentially be living in.
The number one driver of homelessness in New York City is domestic violence, is victims of domestic violence who have given locks to their abusers and who are afraid of staying in their homes.
Yeah, so relatively easy to go in, change those locks, make it so these people can go back home.
And so as a result, to ensure that victims of domestic violence have the ability to recover, to rebuild their lives in the communities that they live in, we are proposing that the county pays for lock changes for these victims.
Yeah, you're not talking about a lot of money there either. 5:45, let's head over to the 77 WABC Sports Desk where we find Justin Ehrlich.
Oh, hello there, Noam Layden. Thank you very much. On the ice at the Garden, that's where we'll begin. Matt Rempe and Artemi Panarin scored 33 seconds apart in the second period. And the President's Trophy-winning Rangers beat the Capitals 4-1 yesterday in Game 1 of their first round of playoff series. Jimmy Vesey had a goal and an assist. Chris Kreider also scored. Barkley Goodrow had two assists for the Rangers. Shesterkin, he finished with 20 saves. The Rangers seeking their first championship here in 30 years. They won their third straight and 11th in the last 14 games. They were able to bottle up Capitals star Alex Ovechkin. He's obviously the one they got to keep an eye on. He had no shots on goal. Ovechkin held without a shot only 5 times in 79 games during the season. The Blue Shirts will pick up round one action with the Caps tomorrow night in Game 2 at the Garden. After dropping Game 1 of their first round series against the Carolina Hurricanes, about a final score of 3-1. That was on Saturday. The Islanders will try and punch back tonight in Game 2. Puck drop there scheduled for 7:30 p.m. in Carolina. On the NBA hardwood, following the Knicks' big 111-104 Game 1 win over the Philadelphia 76ers to open up round 1 of the NBA playoffs, they'll see they can jump out to a commanding 2-0 series lead tonight at the Garden. Tip-off for Game 2 is set for tonight at 7:30 p.m. The Knickerbockers heading in as 5.5-point favorites. In baseball, Luis Gil struck out, a career-high 9 over 5 2/3 innings for his first Major League win in 3 years, and the Yankees took advantage of a sloppy Adam Savale in a 4-run fifth to beat his Tampa Bay Rays 5-4. Alex Verdugo had a big day at the dish, notching 3 hits as New York improved to 6-1 in the series this season. Up next for the Yanks, they'll open a 4-game set against the Oakland Athletics this afternoon at the stadium. First pitch set for 1:05 p.m. and Carlos Rodon scheduled to get the start. In L.A., after winning the first 2 legs of the weekend set, the Mets fell big in their finale against the Dodgers. Final score 10-0 after winning 12-15 since their 0-5 start to the year. The Mets were shut out for the second time this year. New York had won 8 of its previous 9. They'll stay out west for a few more days to meet the Giants in San Fran for a 3-game set. First pitch for Game 1 is scheduled for tonight at 9:45 p.m. Eastern Time. Jose Quintana, primed to take the hill. That's your Sports Gnome. I'm Justin Ehrlich on 77 WABC.
Let's get you up on some of the big stories of the morning. Of course, today, day one of former President Donald Trump's hush money trial in Lower Manhattan. He was calling the judge in the trial a whack job over the weekend.
What's happening here with the judicial system is an outrage. And all over the world, they're watching it. And all over the world, they're seeing it.
He then went on to blast New York Attorney General Letitia James. Opening statements are expected this morning. The former president accused of falsifying business records in order to cover up payments allegedly made to adult film star Stormy Daniels just prior to the 2016 election. Now, my big question is, why aren't there cameras allowed in the courtroom? We should be able to all see this case, but we're not going to be able to. It'll be the court watchers and the reporters who are in the courtroom who relay all this testimony that will take place. Donald Trump says it's all a sham.
Beating him by a lot. And this is the only way they think they can win, but it's not going to work.
Yeah, he says it's all about keeping him off the campaign trail, which it will for about 6 to 8 weeks, depending on how long this case takes.
This is a giant witch hunt to try and hurt a campaign that's beating the worst president in history. Biden's the worst president in the history of our country.
Now, National Enquirer magazine publisher David Pecker, he's set to be the first witness to take the stand today. We'll see if that happens.
According to the New York Times, Pecker is expected to testify about conversations with Trump about the hush money payments. Pecker, who was the publisher of the National Enquirer in 2016, admitted to running a catch-and-kill plan in order to help Trump in the election that year. Also expected on the stand to testify, former Trump personal attorney Michael Cohen, Stormy Daniels, and aide Hope Hicks. I'm Chris Garagio.
If they're going to play out this trial, don't you want to see how it takes place? But we won't have a chance to do so. Lots of Republicans coming to Trump's defense. South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem slamming the hush money case against Donald Trump.
To do it conveniently during a presidential election when he's campaigning to return to the White House, I think, proves that this is all politically motivated.
Noem has been floated as being on a short list of VPs for Donald Trump.
My hope is that the people and the jury will do what is right and hear the evidence and see clearly that this is an unprecedented trial, but it's unprecedented in how ridiculous it is.
Now, from hearing from those court watchers and reporters who have been in the courtroom and were all last week, they say there's definitely some Republicans that made that jury, 12, 7 men, 5 women.
Well, my hope is that all Americans can trust our judicial system, and that's really what this case will prove out. I think it's a little ridiculous that they've waited years to bring these types of charges against Donald Trump.
And we're hearing more, a little more, about this man who set himself on fire. He died outside the courthouse where Trump is on trial in 100 Center Street.
Police say 37-year-old Max Azzarello poured some kind of an accelerant over his body and lit himself on fire in the designated protest area in front of the courthouse. Before setting himself on fire, he was seen throwing anti-government pamphlets into the air. Azzarello was rushed to a hospital burn unit where police say he later died of his injuries. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
552, the other big story of the morning are these rallies, pro-Palestinian rallies that continue to take place on the campus of Columbia University. Students taking over the green there, setting up a tent city. Jewish students on campus saying they feel intimidated, even more so now, with these protests taking place. So much so that a prominent rabbi for Columbia University has warned Jewish students to go home and not to return to campus because of extreme anti-Semitism at the Ivy League University. That is, these protesters were out raising the Palestinian flag. This was yesterday.
The students at Columbia took a very brave step and said enough is enough.
The mass arrests and the suppression of students, I would say that's galvanized us.
Yeah, when we were last talking to you on Friday, the NYPD was called in by Columbia University's president. They arrested 103 protesters, but then the protesters were back on Friday and have been there all weekend long.
The level of pain, anger, and deep love for our people is what drives me. It's what brings me. Palestinians in Gaza, Palestinians in the West Bank, Palestinians all across Palestine are being subjected to, but especially the genocide in Gaza.
So we've seen some of these protests at other Ivy League universities as well, smaller, much smaller, up at Yale University. A Jewish Yale University journalist was reporting on the anti-Israel protest on her campus when she was stabbed in the eye with a Palestinian flag. And all this, as you might gather, has Jewish students on both these campuses and a number of others a little freaked out. Here's a professor at Columbia who says she can't believe what she's seeing happen on her campus.
The whole thing breaks my heart, and especially I think the worst, horrible, most horrible thing is what's going on with these hostages, that it's 198 days today.
She's talking about, of course, the hostages that Hamas has been holding in Gaza since October 7th, the massacre inside Israel. Tonight is the first night of Passover, the Jewish holiday of Passover. So Chabad, which is a Jewish organization that's on campuses across the country, is holding a Passover Seder for students at Columbia University. And they've actually hired security guards, which is sort of unbelievable, to take kids from the dorms to where these seders are taking place because students are worried. Here's one of Chabad rabbis.
Sometimes it takes, at moments, just the individual walking with faith and confidence through whatever is in their way, in their face. Eventually it splits open and we make it through.
And the students who have been most harassed, the Jewish ones, are the ones who are identifiably Jewish, wearing a kippah, clothing that suggests they're Jewish. Chabad will bring those students and any others who feel uneasy about walking through these protests to these seders that'll take place sundown tonight.
In no reality is it okay that a Jewish kid shouldn't be okay to walk out of their dorm room to the Chabad house.
Yeah, so we'll see that on the campus a little bit later tonight. And the president, by the way, of Columbia University has spoke out and says they will do what they can to protect those students on the campus. Out in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn, community rallying around a local restaurant after the business was targeted with anti-black and racist graffiti. Rustic Tavern is owned by France Matulis. He says he's never experienced anything like this in the 16 years that he's owned the restaurant.
It was out in the street, on the floor, on the ground as you walk in. And it was also by the cellar gate, so it was intentional.
So he says he wasn't going to do anything about it. He just said, okay, I'll clean over this, paint over it. But then he thought about it, and he said he took to Facebook to let people know what had happened to their local Brooklyn bar.
I really didn't know how to take it, so I tried to brush it off and just say, screw it. But then more I thought about it, the more I said, okay, I got to report it.
Just got him angry. So, and it got people in the neighborhood angry, and so much so that they came out to the bar in droves and have been.
People came to support. You know, they showed up. It was the community, regulars, family. I mean, you know, I don't know what they intended by doing that, but you know, I have to say, like, it had the opposite effect. You know, if anything, it brought the community together more.
It's made that bar even more popular.